Thanks for noticing that, Thomas. All right, Jim, wake up. You're only allowed to sleep 10 minutes a day. You can't.
We already docked the week's pay. Does he want more?
All right, I'm on.
All right,
you're
thanks.
Good.
All right, now, somebody's got a lot of background stuff going there. If you're shuffling stuff around and it's coming through, mute your phone. All right. Heavenly Father, we come before you this night in agreement, Lord God, that this country needs to return to a solid foundation, and a foundation where we recognize that there are elements brought in that would keep us subjugated to the throne in England and the Pope. And Lord, we have people that know what happened in there and know how to rectify the situation, put us on a more solid footing than this country even started on, what most people identify as our founding. So, Lord, let's refound this country. Give us the supernatural strength and wisdom to carry on. And, Lord, just fill us with your Holy Spirit and bless our time together tonight in Jesus' holy name. Okay, Thomas, knock them out.
Amen.
All right. So first I'll go through just a sample case into a court. And then we'll go over the six writs that these courts would be dealing with in the everyday affairs that they have going on. So initially, what should be done before a complaint is brought is you should have went to the person that has caused you harm in some way privately. And that's normally done by an affidavit. And you should try to exhaust that. You could call that what they call in the de facto administrative remedy. But you should try to exhaust that that means first. And so that would be sending an affidavit of points to the other party. The other party would respond. And at the end of the day, when you're done responding to each other, whatever points are left are then facts. The other ones are the ones in dispute. And so those would be the ones that need to be adjudicated. And so you would walk in and file your complaint directly to the clerk. And that should include all evidence for that case. If you don't have all your evidence, you should not be filing it yet. She will stamp it. She will file it. She will give you a copy. And then it is to be served upon the respondent. At that point, from the date of the service on the respondent, he has 30 days to respond likewise. He is to give his answer and all evidence that he wishes to use. And there is no rules of evidence. It is whatever each party feels proves their side. We're not doing this gatekeeper. We're not manipulating the justice system. Whatever that person feels helps their case. At the point of the answer, the proponent is then given an additional 30 days to review it so that he can, he has every right to have time to prepare against their defense. And it should ideally start within 60 days. Or as close to thereafter. And at that point, the clerk would, through blind draw, select 12 individuals that are signatories to the Jural Society. They will form the court or the tribunal. They are the judge, the jury. There is no judge. There are no lawyers. There are the people. And that's it. The proponent will start off with each piece of evidence and each witness, and at the conclusion of each piece of evidence or witness, the respondent may cross-examine. When the respondent is done cross-examining, the 12 members there also have the right to question anything they feel was not brought up. And the reason for that is we're trying to get to truth and justice. And, of course, each side that's presenting their case is presenting a biased look at the case. And so there might be questions that neither one touched on that may have a bearing on truth and justice. And so we're going to allow the 12 to question if they feel there is a need for it. At the conclusion of the proponent's presentment, the respondent will do the same. And of course, after each piece of evidence or witness, the proponent has a chance to cross-examine the same. And of course, the members of the court also have that opportunity. There are no opening statements. There are no closing statements because that's not testimony. It's not under oath. And that is part of the de facto system to try to sway a jury with something other than fact that's been presented. And so there are no opening or closing statements. At that point, the members of the court will retire to a room to discuss. And they're going to be given a reasonable amount of time. I mean, it's with these cases here, we're talking about actual crimes, not drug offenses, stuff that doesn't matter. We're talking about assaults, battery, rape, theft, real crimes. So it should not take that long, but a reasonable period of time will be given. And at that point, they're going to have to vote. And it takes a unanimous decision for a guilty vote. If it's anything less than unanimous, the respondent is innocent, period. Not guilty, innocent, because it has not been proven beyond a reasonable doubt. If it is guilty, at that point, they're also going to look at any monetary damages, if that's asked for in the original complaint. So, for example, let's say it's a complaint of assault and battery, a simple fight, and the complainant, the proponent says, you know, you broke my nose, you cracked a tooth, and I lost some time off work. And he's presented evidence of the medical bills out of pocket and the time off work, and he's seeking a reasonable amount for pain and suffering, which at common law is up to 3 times the amount of actual damages. It's up to them to decide what the monetary damage actually is. And let's say it was a round figure of 6,000 total medical and off work time. Well, they have the option then of awarding him up to 24,000. That's 6,000 actual, 18,000 punitive. But they can go at any amount below that. Let's say they felt that the complainant or the proponent may have had some fault. They could say, well, he's at 25% fault. We were going to award him 24,000. Let's knock 25% off. It's up to them at that point. But all of that will be decided at once, because if we have this de facto system now where you can be found not guilty of a crime and yet owe money for the crime that you were not guilty of. Now, that's insanity. If you didn't commit the crime, you can't be forced to pay for something you didn't commit. And so we're going back to the way the courts were under true law, which is the entire matter is settled in one case at one time, and it's put to bed. And so if it is guilty, they will decide, if it's asked for, any monetary damages. And the verdict of guilt must be unanimous. The amount of punitive damages may not be. And there was only one way that we looked at that could settle that, and that is, for example, let's say half of the 12 say, well, that was a pretty bad assault. He kicked him when he was down. I mean, let's say 7 years. And then someone else said, well, it was an accidental kick from the way we look at it. And so should be 2 years. At that point, because there is not unanimous on the pains and penalties, we're going to go with the least punitive. That's the only way that that could be settled fairly, because I think you will find that when it comes to pains and penalties within the de facto system, there it's normally set. Of course, the jury never decided it. It was always the judge. And this, in our court, they are the judge. And when you have 12 people, you're going to have differences of opinion in the punitive damages. And no, so the only way that we could see to be fair was, you know, there may be a couple on there that are going to the extreme. They want way too much time for the crime. And then you're going to have some that are, they're being a little light. And then you're going to have some that's in the middle. And really, the only way to be fair about it was to just simply say the least punitive, because we should be forgiving. We should not be out for vengeance. It's about truth and justice, not vengeance. And so the least punitive, and let's say on the monetary part, they say $24,000, a few of them. A couple say $12,000, and a couple more say $15,000. Well, once again, we're going to go with the least punitive amount. So the pains and penalties does not need to be unanimous, because you will, among 12 people, when they have such a latitude in discretion, you're not going to get 12 people necessarily to decide. You may. I mean, it may be such a bad case that all 12 would say, you know, 12 years. But most likely that's not going to happen. And so on the pains and penalties part, it is the least punitive. And at that point, the spokesperson will come back into the court, call the court in order, and they will give the judgment, whether it's guilty or innocent. If it's guilty, of course, they will announce the pains and penalties. At that point, the security will effectuate any pains that there may be, which would be incarceration, and the penalties would be handled by the clerk of court. And so she would be the one that would be looking for assets, bank accounts, anything that could be leaned and removed from possession of the respondent to effectuate correcting the problem and making that person whole again. And in the case of murder, to where the actual person harmed was not present, of course, their family members, you know, wife, children, immediate family would have been the ones harmed, would have been the one bringing the case, and they would be the ones that would be entitled to the monetary. At that point, that case is over. That case is over. And now let's take another case. Let's take a case of, let's say, having to deal with public officials. And so let's look at maybe, as in the case of the de facto, maybe they're not holding office by right. Maybe they were elected. Maybe they didn't take and subscribe their oath properly. Maybe they didn't do it in the amount of time necessary. Maybe they didn't post the bond. Okay. So that would be filed. You would be filing a writ in that case. And that writ then would be heard by the 12 with an oral hearing. And the writs are normally heard in the de facto, it's normally within 30 days. Within our system, it's going to be as soon as you can give notice, the other party, we're going to give them 3 days. 3 days, because the writs are extraordinary remedies, and an extraordinary remedy requires a hearing much faster than a case would. And so we're going to go with 3 days. That's ample time from the time of service for someone to make a small answer to a writ. And we'll go over the writ shortly. And so the politician would have 3 days to respond, and there would be an oral hearing on the matter. And depending upon how the complaint was actually, or the not the complaint, but the petition for a writ was written, they may have denied certain things, such as we deny he filed the bond in time, or we deny that he filed his oath in time. It would be, according to the maxims of law, up to the politician to prove then that he did those things in time. And, of course, if he cannot prove it, that writ would be issued, and that would remove him from that office, which would require a vacancy. And according to whatever the document that is forming the government is in place, there is probably something that would address that issue. Now, let's say someone has been unlawfully imprisoned, and so someone on their behalf is going to file a writ of habeas corpus. Once again, 3 days. So whoever's holding him and the entity that caused him to be held would both be the respondents to it. So in other words, you would have probably the warden, and let's say it was just some private person, Joe Schmo. So those two would be the respondents. 72 hours, they must show why that person is being held lawfully. If they can do that, he will remain held. If not, he will be released. Just that simple.
Tom, this being, I hate to interrupt you, but you keep saying 3 days, 72 hours. Are these work days, or are these just consecutive days?
These under the common law, the only day off was Sundays.
Okay.
And of course, we can understand that that was the day of worship. Saturdays were a judicial day. And so we must, of course, have a small understanding of the actual law as it went back in time. But, yes, Sundays were the only non-judicial days there were. There was no such thing as holidays at that time. So it was 6 days a week. And so Sundays would be the only day that did not count.
Tom, this is Jim from Florida. Could you also touch upon on that first case that you talked about, if the person was found innocent, if there's any retribution, and how is that?
Okay. And at that point, if he's found innocent, what will happen normally is, I mean, automatically, I as the respondent would say, look, it would be something what you would look at in the de facto as a countersuit. I would say, look, I spent 47 hours of my time preparing to defend myself. I spent, let's say $200 in getting the material needed for the evidence, maybe printing it off ink, or maybe having to get certified copies somewhere or something. Whatever it cost me in expenses, I would countersue and say, look, if I'm found innocent, then I demand that I be compensated for my time, which is not unreasonable. We're trying to keep people from filing frivolous cases. And under old law, in order to file a case, you usually had to have an indemnity bond. And that is to indemnify the other person against any damages they may had. And it was the amount of that indemnity bond would have been based upon the amount of damages that the proponent was seeking. So let's say he was seeking $24,000 in damages. Normally, you would have to match that with an indemnity bond. Now, of course, today, in present terms, most of us are flat broke, and we could not afford the bond. And so this is the only way that we could do it now, and this court of record is really only meant to be a temporary thing as a bridge between the old and the new. And so you would seek whatever you could prove. Let's say you had to take time off work, okay, because you had to prepare your defense. You can ask for reasonable amount of pay for your time, and I would say that reasonable would be it could really be no more than you would make at your job. So let's say you made $20 an hour as a plumber, and you needed 47 hours to prepare, then I would say that you would be okay and asking for $940 in labor. I mean, let's say you spent, you know, three cartridges of ink, $20 each, a ream of paper, $20, and you had to get a couple of certified copies of something. Did somebody say something?
No.
Okay. So you'd be looking at about $80. So you would add those two together, a little over $1,000. You would countersue for that amount in case you were found innocent. Of course, if you're guilty, that's you're not going to get that. I mean, that's quite obvious. That's not justice. But if you're innocent, yes, you have every right to ask for that. And let's say that you have a profession that relies heavily upon your reputation. If you can show that you had a downturn in business because of that complaint and you're found innocent, you would have every right to seek the difference in what your business would have been compared to what it was. And, of course, that would be by back record. So let's say this happened in the month of May. We would look at the previous year's May, and any difference, you would be able to reasonably seek that. And that's that you're looking at that as something sort of like libel and slander. And so that is an option that you would have as a respondent if you're found innocent. But you must ask for that in your answer. The court has to be moved by you. The court just cannot arbitrarily decide things. So, and if you're seeking that, you must ask for it. Absolutely. Did that explain it, Jim?
Yes. You meant by asking for it that prior to them going to deliberate the final answer so that, that if they did come out innocent, then they would then deliberate the countersuit, so to speak, and then come in.
So right. When you put your answer into the original complaint, that's when you would ask for it.
Okay.
Because at that point, you would have been able to ascertain how much time you spent preparing your defense, what expenses you actually had, and if you had a downturn in business, possibly.
Thank you.
Because remember, the point of law is to return you to whole as if this thing never happened, regardless of which side you're on. And so anything that would return you to whole, you need to understand, you need to ask for that. You need to ask for it. If you don't ask for it, you don't receive. And this is part of personal responsibility. Part of being a free man or woman is personal responsibility and being able to handle your own affairs.
And tell you what I did.
Go ahead.
I don't mean to interrupt, and everybody will probably say, "Oh, he's crazy." But this is what I did. In one case, I was requested by the court to pay $1,200 on a traffic ticket. I was so pissed off before I even got to the court, let alone after the judge did this. I went out to the truck. I grabbed a hold of $100 trillion in Zimbabwe currency, buy it on the net for 90 cents, approximate. I handed it to the court clerk. I said, "Here, paid in full. Pay the rest back to me in U.S. currency, and we'll be done with this business." She looked at me and she says, "I'm sorry, we don't accept foreign currency." I said, "What do you mean you don't accept foreign currency? You accepted a U.N. flag, didn't you?"
And, of course, in our court of record, you couldn't do that. I mean, a court of record under real law only accepts substance.
Under a real court of law, they wouldn't accept it, a U.N. flag in a traffic court in New York.
Of course. I mean, and that's what we're trying to make here, is an actual court of law and not a fiction.
Yes.
And so before I go on to the writs that this court would be using, the extraordinary writs that would normally issue from the King's Bench, the highest court there is under law, are there any questions concerning the court of record there?
Well, I got a couple. This is Dean in Virginia.
Okay.
You know, under there, let's see, how you supposed to put that? Under their way of doing business, if they incarcerate you, it's $1,800-something a minute. If you go by the case in Florida of Trevisant versus City of Tampa, they unlawfully incarcerated him, and they held him for 23 minutes. He had a bad back. He was hollering that he wasn't supposed to be in there, and they needed to let him out. He wanted to see what he was going to pay the bond, and they were supposed to let him pay this bond, and instead the deputy locked him up. Well, when he locked him up, he put him into this concrete cell with a concrete bench and all this stuff. Well, this guy couldn't handle it on his back, so he told him he needed to get out of there. They wouldn't listen to him, and because of that, it caused him pain and suffering. Well, when it came out that when he won the case, the judgment was 23 minutes, $25,000. And if you take 23 and divide 25,000 by 23 minutes, you see how much he gets per minute, and that works out to be over $1 million a day. And basically, what that's telling us is even they figure they figure that your freedom is worth a whole lot more than what the normal person out here would think, because this man could have been taking care of his own comfort, but instead they put him in a cell where he couldn't and they wouldn't. So they deprived him of his liberties, his freedom of taking care of himself, and so it cost them money. Now, they realized that in that case, so he was awarded that much. Now, in another case, this guy had to sell his property, and because he had to sell his property because they wouldn't let him build on it, like he already had permits to build on it and all this stuff, they wouldn't let him go ahead and do it. And this is a Rhode Island case. And because they wouldn't let him do that, he ended up selling. They charged the county $8 million, I think, or something like that. Anyway, and then it was $1.4 million, I think it was, for for aggravation of having to go through that. And so if you got a case going on for, like, I've got one going on for 2 years now, and it's just that the court down there just won't listen, that is aggravation. I've had to hire drivers to put in my place to drive my truck while they go ahead and keep my CDL suspended. Well, now it's even lapsed. I can't even go get it renewed without paying their fee. So if I went and did that, that would be damages on top of damages. And so, you know, you got to, when you go look at these cases, you got to look at stuff like that too. And there's this thing called in their society. That's what I was trying to think of. Society is what you call it. Call what they're doing in their fictitious world. In their world, you're also supposed to be able to get treble damages, three times the damages that you had to put out for whatever you had to do, because it's supposed to be to keep that from happening again. It's supposed to be a deterrent. Well, we've got to keep that in mind too, because if they do this stuff to us, then we should be able to get what their penalty says it is, not just ours. See what I mean?
And I did discuss the triple, because at common law it is triple to your actual out-of-pocket. But what you're not getting is that the person bringing the complaint or having you arrested will be a live man, not a fiction.
Yeah.
And so that would be brought against that person.
Yeah.
Because the government's not going to be involved in these crime things. That's not what. That's not how law is supposed to be. They're operating in a commercial capacity to make money. The court of record, that's not what this is about. We've got to stop thinking statutory de facto stuff. You understand what I'm saying? In other words,
not really,
in our court, the state, there is no such thing as a fiction walking into a court of record.
Right.
It would be a live man.
I comprehend that. But here's what I'm saying, is that if this live man did this, see, here's the thing. That fiction cannot go against their rules, and that's just it. When that fiction or that live man does something outside the realm of what his job is supposed to be, a cop pulls you over and writes you a ticket when there's no and tries to extort money from you when there's no harm party. Okay, whether that's his job or not doesn't really matter. He is violating your rights.
Correct, but you're not understanding. That court cannot, the police officer cannot bring a traffic ticket to our court.
Well, but then he's brought it to his. Now you got to combat that and bring him into your court then.
And that's what we're getting
okay.
ready to discuss, yeah. That's
now,
the very
now,
court that would do that.
Now here's what I'm talking about, though. Once you do that, and you bring him into
defendant.
Right. I understand.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I comprehend. I'm trying to get away from saying understand because in their language, understand puts you under their authority, and I don't want to do that. But anyway.
Well, we use regular language. We don't use their legalese doublespeak.
Yeah. Well, what I'm getting at, though, is that these people, there's a penalty there that they know or they're supposed to know. And under their society, because you don't know, doesn't really matter. Now, he's taking you in there, and he's trying to extort money from you. And he's trying to get the court to join with him and in the conspiracy to commit racketeering and extort money from you, okay? How many of those are you going to be able to use in your court? Can you use racketeering? Can you use those things that he's doing to see if a politician does something that they're not supposed to do, if a judge does something he's not supposed to do, he's supposed to automatically, mandatorily, immediately recuse themselves. And if they don't, someone in the audience that sees that the judge is showing a bias can stand up and say something, and that judge is removed. That judge is removed whether they sit there or not, okay?
You're not understanding the interface between a real court and their fictional court. It would be by way of writ. What you're talking about does not even matter with a court of record. You're trying to deal with their de facto stuff. We're not.
No, I'm trying to point out all the different things that are going wrong out there and that we need to fix
that's what you fix with a court of record. That's what you fix with a court of record.
Okay, but
you
you're not making
the
penalties.
You'd be able to see.
Well, you're not making the penalties hard enough on them if you're going to let them off with just charging, you know, with just what you lost wages and stuff like that.
No, I never said that. I said you're doing a criminal and civil all in one case.
Okay, well, I'll be quiet and listen to it a little bit more see if we get closer on our thoughts then. Thank you.
Okay, well, I mean, I thought I made it clear when I said assault, they said 2 years in jail and a penalty. I mean, it's all one case. It's not a separate case. And we've got to get out of this de facto way of thinking. And the purpose of the court of record is a temporary bridge to return the rule of law to government. It's a temporary bridge. It's not the final solution. It's something temporary so that you can actually clean up the government as they commit crimes against real men with hands and legs. It's not meant to be the two systems stay in place forever. No, only one system's going to be there at the end. And it's up to the people to decide which one it's going to be, by which one they support. And so in dealing with, let's say, that you get, we'll use his example, traffic ticket on the side of the road, okay, from the de facto, has no authority over you because you've declared yourself free. You've declared yourself to be part of a different society, a private contractual society. And so there are six writs that can be utilized that are extraordinary in nature, which requires the three-day hearing. And the first one's going to be mandamus. And that comes from a court of superior jurisdiction. And, of course, our court of record is based upon the absolute original jurisdiction, venue, and law form, which makes it superior. And it's directed to a private or municipal corporation, any of its officers, an executive, an administrative, or a judicial officer, commanding the performance of a particular act specified, and directing the restoration of the proponent to the rights or privileges which he has been deprived of. The second one would be prohibition. That is the writ issued by a superior court, once again, superior jurisdiction, venue, and law form, directed to a judge and the parties of a suit in an inferior court, commanding them to cease the prosecution of the same. Upon the suggestion that that cause originally does not belong to that jurisdiction, but to the cognizance of our court. It's the counterpart to the writ of mandate. It basically arrests the proceedings of any tribunal, corporation, board, or person when they are in excess of their own jurisdiction. Co warranto. It is for those that have usurped an office, a franchise, or a liberty, and to inquire by what authority he supports his claim. And so this is one that would be used specifically against public officials to show that they are not in their constitutionally compliant civilian structure, but are in fact in a corporate setting. And so it would remove them from that constitutional office, even though they may only be residing in that constitutional office a fraction of the time. It would remove them, and it would make that office vacant at that point. Now, I'm sure you guys can see what you can do with that. Habeas corpus. Of course, that is for bringing the party before a court or judge when he's contesting why he is imprisoned and those that are imprisoning him. And I'm sure we're all very aware of that one. The next one is the writ of certiorari. And that is to bring a case to a different court. And, of course, I think it's quite clear that that would be used to bring a proceeding from a de facto court to a court of record. The last one is a writ of replevin. And you'll have to forgive me, my computer crashed, so give me a second here. And the writ of replevin is basically a writ of repossession. Some sort of property has been stolen from you. And in this case, I would say that you would look at public property, such as a courthouse, such as a governor's mansion, any of these things that these corporations purport to be public buildings and public property, yet are in fact private property and have been stolen from us. Once again, I think you can see where this would be used. So those are the six writs that this court will utilize and issue. Are there any questions on any of them?
I do, but I don't know how to pose it, so I'd have to do it my own way.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, from one of my people, they sent me a text, and it says, quote, unquote, "I am interested in finding someone who has documentation on Social Security and or workman's comp and can help me there. It is nice of you to concern yourself, but without a printer or funds," this person says, "I am dead on the other issues. I may be dead on this as well, but That is all I have any interest in right now. It's either this or dying. This person is well, I told you about it earlier. They have closed her Social Security because the doctor prescribed the wrong saline solution for a morphine pump and damn near killed her. And now that we have Social Security away from her.
That is a private de facto administrative court. And as much as I feel bad, and I've helped people in the past on hundreds of cases, I have focused my attention on helping the children who have no voice and the country. And so I do not have time to assist. But if she is looking for the assistance within the de facto, I would say hire an attorney. And they will take a percentage of it at the conclusion of the case.
Yeah, she don't trust attorneys bar certified, especially.
Well, she's playing with de facto stuff. I mean, I don't have the time. I'm trying to save the country and the children's future. I don't have the time to delve into one person's. I mean, I get questions all day on foreclosures and criminal cases. I don't have time to do it. I mean, I work for free. There may be someone on the call that can maybe assist her.
Five people on this call.
She can.
All I know is she's going to be dead before this is all over with.
Well, and our children are being murdered every day too. And I mean, we're all being abused.
Well, I look at it a little different than probably everybody else does. When somebody calls out for my assistance, I don't sit around like Hillary Clinton and let somebody die, let's say Benghazi.
And, I mean, I would love to help her. I don't have time to do it.
I totally hear you.
There may be someone on the call that can assist her. Otherwise, there are forms that you can use through the Social Security Administration for administrative filings on your own behalf that you can get the form from their office and you can hand write it out. But she is looking at an administrative court, and she is looking at probably a 6-month wait to even get a hearing.
Hey, Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Carl. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Okay. Yeah, I'm familiar with the case in question, and I worked with somebody who claimed to have the ability to file paperwork in the de facto jurisdiction. I filed all that stuff for her, but of course they just summarily ignored it because they're stuck on one point, and one point is enough for them to say no more benefits. And that is
correct.
She could not travel to a doctor to have them verify anything. And she still refuses to do that. There's nothing. I wish there was something I could do. I filed everything that I can, but it comes down to that one stickler, and I can't get her off of that one.
And she has to realize that she's trying to receive a benefit in their eyes from them, and if they say jump, you have to say how high.
Mm-hmm.
And if all they're asking for is her to see a doctor to get it verified, then that is her own fault for not going and seeing the doctor. They will even give you they will pay you back for the expenses you pay out to go see that doctor, travel expenses even. So there is an actual.
She doesn't even have those that kind of money to pay to get.
Right.
Get,
And if you can show that you don't have that money, they will pay for that travel expense up front, but you have to show that you're indigent.
Yeah.
And that is part of being responsible for yourself and if not, if you are physically incapable of having someone close to you do it. And it sounds like you tried to do everything you could. And if the stickling point of them is her seeing a doctor, well, then she should have found a way to see a doctor. There's nothing we can do about that.
Maybe there's something, maybe the family should just say, hey, she's not competent and maybe do it for her, possibly.
Well, she would still have to see a doctor, but she could appoint someone a power of attorney within the administrative process.
Tom, I am
physically or mentally incapable.
Tom, I am her power of attorney, and it doesn't matter.
Okay. And so it did. You basically, you did everything you could, but she needs to see a doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she's got to go see a doctor. I mean, where's her family? Is her family? Are they not going to help her?
I'll talk to you later, Carl, about this. Maybe we can, you know, discuss these matters a little more in depth.
Yeah, let's do it.
I mean, I trust me, I feel bad. I helped people for 4 years free of charge with criminal cases, civil cases, foreclosures. I mean, but my focus is simply on the nation as a whole and the children, those that have no voice. And as a person, they have family to speak for them. And so it's sad that her family is not assisting her.
Carl is one that I asked to call. I'm honored that you came to the room today, Carl, so thank you.
You're more than welcome. And, Tom, I'm going to have to get off of here because I've got stuff I've got to take care of. But keep up the good work.
No problem.
We're going to continue to try and do exactly what we told you we're going to do. Was there some good news on that front here today as far as the enforcement side goes?
Well, it's looking a little better. It's looking a little better. If we can find what we need to find there, it's looking a little better.
There's some groups out there that, I can talk to you privately on that, and I will. But keep up the search. I'm sure you're going to find it eventually.
Yeah, you can call me after the call here anytime. You know my number.
Okay. I'll talk to you next. All right.
Okay. Any other comments or questions?
Hello, Tom.
Hello.
Yeah, this is Russ Thompson. I had the pleasure of talking to you yesterday from North Carolina.
Okay, I recognize the voice.
Oh, I'm glad you did. You like that deep voice?
I like it. I like it. Did you have a comment or question?
No, I'm just listening to you. I just got on, but I just got finished teaching a class, and I just want to jump on because I dialed. I think you did the wrong number and gave him the wrong access code. So I'm on the line right now. Just listen to you.
Okay. Well, you'll be able to catch the previous hour here where we went over what we were going over tomorrow on Hudok. You'll have a recording of it.
All right. That's good.
Now, Phil, I forgot. Phil, are you still on here, Phil, or did you have to go to sleep yet? Yeah, he's got school tomorrow.
I think I see him leave the call, Tom.
Okay. Well, I'll make the announcement for him then. He is going to be at the Oath Keepers wonderful convention in West Virginia here next weekend with his wonderful Obama head and a booth specifically set up to inform the Oath Keepers of their foreign agent status and how to clear that up. So he will be there for the full 3-day event with his own booth. And I think we'll be able to see very quickly how many of these foreign agents are willing to accept our forgiveness offer and assist us in restoring this country. So we will keep you updated as to what happens there next weekend. I'm not expecting the best results from it, but you never know. I could be surprised. Any other questions or comments?
I have a question, Tommy.
Okay, Tommy.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I think I know who it is, too, so go right ahead.
Yeah, I have a question. The question is, I caught the tail end of the Court of Record, and Where are you in that process, or where are we in that process? You might have already stated it right at the beginning of that conversation, but I just caught the tail end of it with the writs and so on and so forth.
Okay, well, where we're at is we just got the final version, and we will be doing a radio show. Is today Thursday?
It is.
Thursday.
Okay. Yeah, you'll have to forgive me. I haven't slept, really. So, okay, so tomorrow night we will be doing a show that has a large audience in West Virginia, and we will be seeking those that would be willing to join the Private Journal Society to implement it here. Of course, people can implement it anywhere in America that they want. Just realize that anywhere you go, you're going to have to provide your own enforcement for it. But you can implement it and have it there waiting at any point in time anywhere in America. As a matter of fact, you can Go ahead.
Has the paperwork remained the same, the declaration as well as the trust indenture?
Well, the trust indenture is a whole separate issue. We haven't focused on that yet.
Okay.
We were simply looking for the forming a private journal society, and that document has been amended, and I believe the final version is on hudoc.info now.
All right, fantastic. And then going back to the enforcement, what do you got out there in West Virginia as of when you're going to set up this court of record? Have you guys established your local enforcement?
The enforcement, of course not, because so far no one has wished to step up to the plate.
Mm-hmm.
We are working on that issue. And have some fronts that have opened, but certain things have to be done a certain way if we wish that to happen. But that would have to be worked out over the next week or so.
Okay. That's all I have. Thank you very much.
Right. No problem.
This is Jim from Florida. I wanted to mention to everyone online tonight that I am in the process. We've got all the state petitions done and the state acts that would go to the legislators only. But looking at a list right now, I've got a half dozen states confirmed out of the 50, obviously with West Virginia in there. And so I'm looking for volunteers that want to take the lead on the petition. So once again, if you don't want to download the docs off of the website, you can get in touch with me, and I will send them to you through an email, and then I will hold your hand if you need to. I got guidelines, but I will hold your hand if you need to go ahead and step by step go through that. I've done them here for Florida, so I've got one last thing on there to get, and we'll be done, and those will be in the can. My hope was that we would be able to kind of unite on this portion and get all the state petitions kind of filled out and ready to go, ready to be mailed, and then mail them all off at the end of the month. So that was the hope, but I still need people to step up, and I wish you wouldn't be afraid of this. This is an innocuous type of situation where these petitions are just mailed in. There's no court stamps that are needed. There's no, there's no kind of delving into their system at all with this. It's simply just mailing off these petitions, which are basically to give the leadership in your state notice. I want to share with you, if you are going to get involved, and I'm not trying to scare anyone away, but I believe, obviously, as we all do in full transparency, it's going to take probably about, at best guess, $20 to $25 worth of paper ink to buy a red ink stamp from your local office supply store, and then of course the postage in the envelopes. So that's it. So it's about that much cost involved for the leader. It's probably a good portion of the lion's share of a day's worth of work to print everything out. There's 8 pages to the petition. On average, each state will have about 17 copies. So that's 17 envelopes, etc. And then of course the postage. So for the other signatures, it's just sitting there for probably an hour's worth of your time to sign, print your name, sign it, and then do your thumbprint on the various pages in the 8-page document. In the last piece is the acts that have been put together. They're 4 pages each, and each of the legislators need a copy of that in their envelope. So that's about it. But please, I'm begging you, because I'll probably end up giving you a call this week at some point in the next 7 days, whoever's on the call. Since I run the board, I have everybody's number, and I'll be asking if you want to participate at all in that. I think Alicia's also going to help out with that portion of it. So that's about it. Please give me a shout out. My number is 941-330-7040. So that's 941-330-7040. I've heard from a few of you folks out there already, and I appreciate that stepping up to the plate. And, of course, you know, Tom, Phil, and Gene feed me leads for folks that want to help also. So, but anyways, I figured everyone on the call should at least as a minimum step up. If you've been a regular listener, I really would anticipate that you'd want to help at least with filing a petition, which is really going to bring you no harm, no foul. But at least it will send a resounding message across the nation to our leadership that we're on to them. We understand their corporate state that they belong to, whether they realize it or not. And at least, you know, it will, like I said, give them notice. So I yield.
Okay. And to expand on that, Jim, just to let the people realize that the petition is written from the standpoint of a citizen. So you do not have to declare your freedom. You do not have to declare yourself to be a king or a queen. You can stay in your corporate slave status and file these. They are petitions. They are protected by the purported First Amendment. And so there is no retribution that we can see that they can come up with for simply doing something that you have a purported right to do.
Right.
And we would like to see multiple groups within each state file the same one so that they're aware that many, many people are watching and looking. And you can look at this petition as 14 facts out of the gate that you would be walking into a court with in a complaint, because they're not going to answer you. There is no answer that they can give, and they will not return to constitutional government because of this petition. And so you will have given them notice, all three branches, under the principle of notice to agent is notice to principal. That means the entire structure of the state has been notified of the crimes, which automatically out of the gate gets you a charge of misprision of felony if they do not correct those actions. And so this is a multi-pronged document and should be looked at in that manner.
I was just going to add that, you know, a lot of folks that I've spoken to are sort of, you know, mentioned, well, I want to, you know, have my lawyers look at this, or, you know, this or that, or they'll come up with, you know, how's this going to affect my Social Security check or my benefits from this government agency or not? You know, look, people, I think that it's been pretty clear throughout these conversations that Tom isn't looking for anarchy. We're not looking for, you know, violence. And so, you know, really, this is like it's been mentioned, there's really not any blowback or retribution that's going to come back upon you. So just, you know, sort of be tentative or even afraid to just file these state petitions is, you know, and when push comes to shove, it's silly. I mean, you're not going to get hurt with this. But at any rate, I yield.
And I will add that I am actually under a contract with over 70 provisions of things that I cannot do. They can come and kidnap me at any point without a warrant again. And I filed a complaint against them, and we have received no blowback. So a simple petition is nothing to worry about. Petitions are given out every day. People protest every day. And the only time that you get into trouble is in the protesting is when you do something stupid. A petition is something that you have a purported right to do under your purported constitution. So there should be no scared people. If you need to consult a lawyer, that means that you are in fact a slave and you should probably disconnect from this call and forget everything you heard. Someone have something? I heard someone say something.
It was just feedback.
Okay. And I'm looking, I'm trying to look here. We have those. So you can contact Jim, and Jim, you're very brave for putting your phone number out like that. I hope you have unlimited minutes. And, yes, they are here on hudoc.info also. You can receive them. You do not need to bother Jim. Not necessary, but I guess you can. He's put it out there. He did it, not me. It's under hudoc.info, bottom right-hand corner, a link called Docs Action Page. It's highlighted in red with the words new on either side of it. You can't miss it. If you click into there, the first section is petition and demand, one for each state. Underneath of it are the acts for the 50 states. And below it appears to be, yes, it appears to be the court of record and also the guidelines for filling out the paperwork, which you want me to go over those real quick, Jim, for you? Because I've got it right here in front of me.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, so under the guidelines, he does put, if you have any questions, his email and phone number. Once again, very brave. You can download them here right off the HUDOC site. You're going to be looking to go through them quickly and just make sure that the state-specific details are correct. And that is mainly so that you actually read this document and you understand what you're doing. You should never submit anything if you're not aware of what you're doing. Jim has been very nice to go through and do his best to get everything in there, but he is human. He may have missed something. So we're asking that you read these very short documents through and make sure that your state-specific details are correct. And there won't be many places where you will need to do that, but you just want to make sure it's the right state, it's the right date that you came into the union, and you're going to be filling in the blanks. That would be the date, month, your name, and, of course, a thumbprint. And, of course, when you're doing the date, you want to spell out the date. So instead of the number 23, you want to spell out the word 23. You want to spell out the year. That does denote a different jurisdiction. That is just us trying to teach you a little bit of being a free man and woman. You want to sign your name in the normal way you were taught, upper and lower case. You want it to be a signature, and you want that thumbprint to touch that signature at some point, some place, doesn't matter where, it just needs to touch. I believe that you filled these out with three persons. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. So if you are the person that is downloading this, we would ask that you find two other people. Not necessary. Let me go back here and see. Were those PDFs that you sent to me, or were those Word docs for that?
Yeah, they're all PDFs.
Okay, so unless you have a PDF editor, you may need to contact him. Do you still have the doc files that's editable?
I do. You can call me, and if you wanted five people, I could add on a couple of signatures.
Or if you wanted to drop it down to one, I mean, the reason we did three was simply we are trying to keep in line with true law, which emanates from the Bible, and out of the mouths of two or three, the matter is settled. But you can do it as one. That's not a problem. And if you need the Word docs, then you would need to get a hold of Jim there. Otherwise, the PDFs are set for three. And let me pull the document back up here. I had to bounce back. Okay, so you're going to use a red ink for your thumbprint, for the ink on the signature. It doesn't matter. We don't care what they say. You can use black, purple, yellow, green. I don't even care. Whatever color you like, sign it in it. Doesn't matter. We're not going by their imaginary. Blue is Admiralty. Black is this. Red is that. Who cares? If you're believing their fictional environment, please stop listening to this call and go back to imaginary land. Now, this is going to be sent to the three branches, and I believe that he went through and did the work for you and found the necessary people to send it to the three branches, including their addresses, so that you just need to copy those to the envelope. Of course, you may want to check real quickly to make sure that those persons are the ones still in office and that their address hasn't changed, but most likely the address has never changed, and most likely Jim got it right. If he didn't, we will dock more of his pay. Just let me know. With the legislative branch, we're giving you the option of giving them some state acts that would return the government to a constitutionally compliant structure and dissolve these corporations that are ruining our lives. And that is an option that we didn't get to utilize in West Virginia because we did this at the end of their session. But I had written them, and so we're offering them to you to send to the legislative branch only. They're the only ones that can enact them, and they're not going to enact them because they would be dissolving themselves. And they're not going to do that at this point in time. But it is to show that you do understand even more the fraud that they are perpetrating and that you know how to fix it. You know how to fix it because you're telling them in these acts how to fix it. So that's a psychological thing. So we recommend that you do it, but that's not required, and those documents are under that same link. Of course, you want to make one copy of your wedding signature document before you mail it off to keep for your records. And if you can digitally scan a copy of your signed documents and send it to the email address on hudoc.info, we will post it for you so that you can show the country that you've stood up as a real man or woman and have said no. That's an option for you. You don't have to. But we would appreciate being able to show that people are standing up and waking up across the country. And I think that it would help when they come to visit our website that they see that West Virginia is not the only one doing something. Because most people are scared to be the first or second or third in line to do something. So as they see more and more people are doing it, they're more likely to get involved themselves. And, of course, each person that's signing this should have their own copy for their own records. Like I said, if you can scan it, email it to the address on hudoc.info. If you don't have a scanner, you can mail us a copy. Just make sure it has your wedding signature and thumbprint on it, and Phil will scan it in and post it on the website for you. It's not required, but we're offering it as a way to show that you have stood up and said no. Is there anything else on those that you want to touch on, Jim?
No, that was it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. And then we are, as soon as Phil gets the time, because he's been doing many things here, but as soon as he gets the time, we will be posting the, what was the name of it, the renunciation and vacating of corporate office and the oath for a constitutionally compliant civilian structure. That is another option that you have. You can take that around in person to a local level. You can mail it off to the local level. You can take it to the state level. You can take it to anybody that's in public office right now. That is another option. And you can do that as a citizen. Once again, you do not need to have declared yourself free and independent. That is the second option. And the third option is you can just send the acts into the legislature. You can just send them in and say, look, I want this brought to the floor. I want you guys to debate it, and I'd like you guys to pass this so that we can return to a constitutionally compliant civilian authority. Once again, to petition your legislature with those acts, you can be a citizen. You do not have to be free and independent. And, of course, you can, right out the gate, if you feel like it, you can file a complaint. And you can use ours as a template, but you would need to remove the 14 points from the petition that were included as fact in there. But you could file a complaint right out of the gate based upon the judicial notice and the CDs of evidence that we have filed in the case. You could do that right out of the gate if you feel like it. Once again, it is much smarter to start with the petition so that you're walking in with 14 facts, but you do not need to. You can remove those, and you're still going to prove the case quite easily with the judicial notice and the evidence that we submitted on CD. And the evidence that we submitted on CD is on hudoc.info, in case any of you are curious and wish to take a look. Let me pop it up and see where it's at here. It looks like files entered into record via CD. And we've done two CDs so far. You click on the first one, you'll see the first things that we submitted. If you click on the second one, you will see the second ones that we submitted. And we are going to be doing an amended complaint here very shortly. And we will have a third CD evidence file that will be going in, and as soon as that is done, those will be posted as well. And anybody that's willing to step out and file a complaint, as long as I'm breathing, I will offer assistance through the course of that case, because they're going to give you a short little answer or response, and you need to be very careful in how you respond. So as long as I'm still breathing, I will offer my assistance on that for those brave souls that wish to file a complaint. And as the petitions, you can file the same complaint by different people or different groups multiple times within the same state. The more it gets filed, the more they're aware that people are watching and paying attention, the more pressure that's put on them. And you never know. At some point, you may put on enough pressure to bust that pipe. And so with that, I will once again open it up to comments or questions.
This is Martha Vineyards from Ohio.
Okay.
Actually, it's set off. You mentioned that if we need assistance. So when I go to file these complaints and they answer me, is that when you're saying that you'll come to my assistance?
A complaint in court, yes. Not a petition, but an actual complaint in court. I will offer assistance. I'm not going to write it for you, but I can tell you the points you need to respond to, and you will need to put it in your own words, because you may have to go argue that case in court.
Okay. Well, I'm just at this point, I'm just going to file the petition.
And the petition is a good start, and the next step would be you would want to file a complaint, because at that point you've already proven misprision of felony. They're not going to give you what you want in a petition. We petitioned for hundreds of years, and look where it got us. It got us nowhere.
Okay.
But it's just the first step so that you have 14 facts you walk into court with right out of the gate.
Okay.
It's always nice to walk in with as many facts as you can. But, yes, I will. Jim is working on getting the complaints adapted to each state. I'm not sure how long that will take him on that. That is a very daunting task to go through each of those complaints and do that. But if you are looking to file the complaint, you would need to go ahead and look ahead of time at our evidence files that we submitted, because, like in our case, we submitted – things that had to do specifically with West Virginia. So let's say I'm looking here. We had the hand-penned Constitution of 1872. So So in the meantime, you would want to be looking for the Constitution that they're claiming is in full force and effect, and you would want to get a copy of it in some manner.
For the state of Ohio.
For the state of Ohio. Okay. You would also want to look, try to find a flow chart, because I believe every state will have one, and the flow chart showed that the citizens were even above the highest court. Go ahead.
Where would I go to get these?
We got, the hand-penned Constitution, that was, we went to the state archive and paid for a copy. It's always best to get the hand-penned as possible, because when they go and transform it to text, they normally change status and capacities, meaning they change upper and lower case, and it's not what was originally, the intent is not there. They've committed fraud normally when they change it to text, so if you can find the hand pen, that is the best one to have. I think it may have cost the cost of paper for us to get a copy of it. I mean, maybe $20 or so.
Okay.
Some of the documents on here, like the War Powers Act, the executive orders, the Senate report, you can download right from here. We have the military prison document here. That was someone I knew that I was, when I was in there with them, I got a hold of a document while I was in prison. You may not be able to get a hold of that. You should be looking on manta.com and creditreports.dnb.com for your legislative, executive, and judicial branch incorporations, because we did submit those right out of the gate, showing that they were private for-profit corporations, and the actual names that they're utilizing in commerce right now, because that's proving your point. And those are free searches. You're not going to get anything other than the address and the actual name that they're utilizing at this point for free. But that is enough to walk in with. We had Phil and Gene's oaths that they took. Phil's was for teaching, and Gene's was military service. And we submitted those to show that they were having people sign a fraudulent oath. Any oaths of office that you can get on the public officials, of course, get those and enter that, because it will most likely show that they took an oath to a non-existent document. And that was the first CD filing.
Now, that's all the information that I'll be get sent.
And we put these on CD rather than paper, because had we submitted all of this stuff on paper, it would have been close to 500 pages of paper. So we put it on CD form, digital format. And you can do that. They do CD filings all the time. They did it multiple times in my case personally here. So there's nothing wrong with submitting it on a CD. You would have to give a copy of it to every party with the initial filing in your state. And if you look at HUDOC.info, a lot of the stuff you can just simply download it and then burn it to a CD. The next one, it looks like here we've got most of the stuff you can just download right from here, and you can put it on a CD. The only thing that you wouldn't be able to would be, once again, the governor, the legislature. We have the corporate grouping of the state of West Virginia. This is all stuff that you get off done in Bradstreet and Manta for free. And we also gave them a copy of a dictionary, because we realized that they were illiterate. And so we wanted to give them a copy of the dictionary so that they could become better in English. And when you start getting responses from their lawyers, you will understand what I'm saying. They are functionally illiterate in actual English. But yes, if you go to a complaint and you actually file a complaint into the court, as long as I'm breathing, I will assist you in any responses that come your way. Just realize that I cannot come and represent you in court, that if by chance you get a hearing date, that will be you. And so I will give you the points that you need to address in any of their responses, but you will need to put it in your own words. And, of course, I would look at the final document and maybe critique it a little bit for you. But we're trying to keep everything written in as much your own hand as possible in case you have to argue it.
Okay.
But I will give any assistance that I can in the points that need to be argued, because a lot of us may not understand the little nuances that they're going to try to come at you with.
Okay. Well, I might be proving a judge from 30 years ago right, because he told me I should have been in law. So.
Well, it's not complicated. I mean, if you haven't read our initial complaint, it's very simple, and the average American should be able to understand the way it's written, what we're saying, and should be able to argue it. I would implore you to go there under legal filings and responses and download what we originally filed, and you will see that it was written. I mean, I wrote it, and then it was dumbed down enough so that the average American could understand it.
Okay.
Because had it stayed the way I wrote it, no one would understand it. No one would want to file it.
Okay.
But it is down to the average American's education level so that they can understand exactly what we're saying.
Well,
and I can be reached through, I believe it's hudoc@hudoc.com is the email. For any questions or anything, you can get to me through that email address. And, of course, if it's something with the petition, if you get a hold of Jim and he can't answer it, he knows how to get in contact with me as well.
Okay. Well, I certainly will. I'm going to do what I can.
And we appreciate it. We all need to take a stand now. If we can't do it with action, physical action, in assisting West Virginia, then we implore everybody to at least take some paper action. But action of some kind is needed, now and not later.
I know.
So I thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Okay. I'm going to take my petition, because I've already did my, some of my docs are already done for Arizona. So my best bet is to go to Phoenix, which is where their main, fraudulent hub is. And is that the best thing for me to do? Because there's a courthouse here in Prescott, Arizona as well, but it's probably better for me to go to Phoenix, correct?
Well, your petitions, for your legislatures, I mean, we served them in hand. You can mail them. You can mail them if you need to save time.
I don't want to mail them, because I want to, unless it's return receipt requested, I'll do it that way. Otherwise, I want to send it first. I want to drop it personally.
Well, and there's no problem with that. We did it in hand here in West Virginia, so you can do it in hand. As for the court, you're going to need to find the court in your state that is original jurisdiction for writs, which
it could
be a lower court, but if you Google original jurisdiction, writs, and your state, the applicable code should pop up telling you which court is original jurisdiction.
Okay, that's what I need.
Most likely it's going to be, if you have appeal courts or courts in between the county and the state, most likely it may be one of them. I mean, in West Virginia, we don't have an appeal structure. It's county court to Supreme Court, and that's it. So if you have the in-between structure, it may be an inferior court, or it may be the Supreme Court of your state. But if you Google those words, you should be able to find the applicable code very quickly that will tell you where to go.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Anyone else?
What's the difference between an inferior court and the other?
Well, an inferior court would not have the jurisdiction to issue a writ. Because that's what you're seeking in the complaint, is a writ being issued to correct the situation, the harm that's been caused.
Okay.
And so you're looking for the words original jurisdiction for a writ.
Okay.
And depending upon your state, it could be, it's not going to be a county court. I can guarantee you that. It may be a slightly higher state court, but most likely it is going to be your state Supreme Court.
And would either of those courts recognize ADA 989.3?
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Americans with Disabilities Act.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, they'd have to, because they're a part of the federal structure. They have to recognize it. If not, that's something to add to your complaint right out of the gate.
Okay. Lot of shit to think about, man. Excuse my French. German ain't much better.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, this is Vivian in California.
Okay.
Do you guys have a replay number? Because I came in late and I don't know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, we do have a replay number, but your best bet may be to go to hudoc.info and listen to the previous week's recordings, because you're about 2 weeks late into what we're doing, and just to tell you about the court of record, you wouldn't quite understand what came before that.
Oh, I see. So what is your website again?
It is hudoc, H-U-D as in dog, O-K, .info, and you would look for the tab Interviews. And under the Interview tab, you will look for a conference call with Steve Gronka. And I believe there's either three or four under there now. And if you listened, if you go through and listen to all of them, you would be up to speed then.
So it's hudok.info.
Yes, and look for the Interview tab and then conference call with Steve Gronka.
Gronka. Okay, thank you very much.
No problem. Anyone else?
Little joke on the side. I hope that nobody's paying for Barack Obama's presidential library at a price of $1 billion.
I would not give the man a penny.
Oh, they'll just take it out of our taxes. I don't think anybody's going to give him any money. They'll have to steal it.
Well, that's okay. He may not even be able to get that done if we can actually do what needs done here in America.
Sure. That'll be one of his last
executive orders to put the money to fund his own library.
I think we ought to put all of his documentation in that crystal glass prison up there in Chicago that they built for him. I thought about it, and I said, you know, maybe we ought to just put it in an outhouse, but I don't know. I'm open for suggestions.
Well, I
wouldn't want to pollute the environment with that shit. Pardon my language.
Well, this is Martha Vineyards, and I've put out there many times that I would offer my services to audit the Fed.
Awesome. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay.
All right, Steve or Jim, was there anything else you guys wanted me to touch on then, since it seems everyone is satisfied then at this point?
I don't have anything.
Okay. Steve, anything you want me to touch on?
It sounds like we're done for tonight, unless
okay.
Somebody has another comment.
Well, I always have a comment. How about we put the ISIS Muslim flag over the presidential library of Obama?
God bless y'all.
I'm not going to fly anywhere.
God bless y'all.
It's actually I shizzle now.
I love y'all.
All right, I'm signing off. This is Martha Vineyards from Ohio.
God bless you, Martha.
I'll see you, Martha.
So
God
did they
you.
Name Martha's Vineyard after you?
Not after me. My ancestor named Martha's Vineyards from what I'm told.
That's awesome.
So I'm a patriot from the very beginning.
I think I drank some of her works a time or two.
Well, the company that I'm with, we're brewing wine. We have a vineyard up in northern Michigan, and we're making some wine. It's called Vino Methuselah, and it's brewed with plant-derived minerals in it. They're bottling it now and just waiting for the labels, but, man, it is off the charts.
Well, if I do what I can do as far as auditing this, I mean, Mike, I wasn't an auditor, but I can audit governmental accounting lines. I can find money if I'm put on the, you know, in the right system and on the right trail. So I might need a bottle when I'm done. I'm serious. I know I can do it, so. I'm just.
Well, all you got to do is look at their Kepler accounts and you can find money.
Huh?
All you got to do is look at their Kepler accounts and you can find money.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking for money they've hidden.
Well,
or
Kepler accounts is one of them. Have you ever heard about what's that guy's name? Forgot his name, but he's if you go out to Kepler1.com. And he tells you how he found enough money out in California back when Arnold was hollering about California was broke.
Yeah.
He found enough money out there to run it for 17 years and never have to charge another dime to anybody for taxes for 17 years.
Walter
that's
Breary.
A substantial find. Yeah, that's it.
All the money that they this country has paid for to secure other countries called war debt. Only one country ever paid its war debt back, and that was Finland. The rest still owe us compound interest daily for all the money that has went to these wars. Lady, that would be the best place you could start in doing your investigations.
Well, if you go all the way back to when our debt was supposed to have started, if you look at it, back then the Magna Carta addressed it, and it said that if the king caused you harm, and he did not take care of the harm within 40 or 45 days or something like that, whatever the time limit was, then you could go after him for damages, and you could go after him for everything he owns, including his castles, and as long as you did not harm him or his family. Well, that means that the king, since he didn't answer the redress of grievance by the colonies, he caused them harm on top of harm. Therefore, that debt, the whole debt, was the king's. Even what we borrowed from France was the king's debt. So we could have even set France free from England if we would have had to stay, if our so-called forefathers would have gone back and said, okay, let's
let's go out here and go out to the king for this debt, because it's not our debt, it's his. He caused it. But
you know,
where's
a good place to read about that on the net? What would I type in?
Magna Carta.
Huh?
Magna Carta.
Okay.
The best place to read that is on libertyfund.org, and you look up the Magna Carta with commentary by a guy named McKechnie. The site is libertyfund.org, and the book is Magna Carta with commentary, and it's written by a guy named McKechnie, McKechnie.
God bless. Thanks for the info.
Welcome.
And
by the way, we're in Florida. We're executing that Article 61 of the Magna Carta, which gives us the enforcement capability without relying on corrupt sheriffs or corrupt courts. We have a documented process called the CIPID process. It starts with a complaint. You have to do an investigation. The grand jury has to do an investigation to validate the complaint. The grand jury makes a presentment, and the 40-day clock starts. There's usually three outcomes. One outcome is they immediately start a corrective action because they didn't know they were damaging somebody. The second is that they rebut the presentment and say, you know what, that wasn't us, that was someone else that caused that damage. And if they rebut it effectively, then the grand jury drops the case. If they don't rebut it effectively, then it goes to the trial with a petit jury. And then the last one is at the end of the 40-day period, and this is the most common one now, they do nothing, which is acquiescence. The grand jury then issues an order of default judgment and an immediate indictment, and then it goes into distress and distress. Distrain is encumbering the assets of those that have the default judgment against them, and distress is when the whole community rises up and takes the assets to restore the victim. As of about 2 or 3 weeks ago, we had successfully filed three claims of distrain against a judge, against the state attorney, and against the sitting attorney general in Florida. You can see the documents on We the People, commonlawgrandjury.com.
Does Thomas have all this information?
No, I had a conversation with Thomas about a week and a half ago. We spoke for about an hour and a half. And at the time, I was mostly learning from him.
I'd like somebody to send Little Stinker some information. All that—that's a lot to absorb. But
okay,
like
my name is Roger Dowdell, and I'm a statewide coordinator in Florida for the Common Law Grand Jury. And I'll be happy to send any information to anybody you want me to.
How do I get your name or number from this?
Let me give you my number. It's 941-526.
941-526. 526.
6680.
6680.
And it's Roger, R-O-D-G-E-R.
Just a minute here. My pen is not writing. It generally don't when I got something I really am interested in.
And what is your name?
Little Stinker.
Little Stinker.
941-526-6680. Yep. Correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, Roger. I'll call you after this is over.
Okay.
Adjourned.
And what's your last name, Roger?
Dowdell, D-O-W-D-E-L-L.
Okay.
And my email is rbdredboydavid7804@gmail.com.
Roger, I'll call you in a little while.
Okay. Very good.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
little stinker leaving the room.
So is Martha Vineyards. Thank you.
Hey, Martha?
Martha.
Yes. Yes.
This is Roger speaking. You mentioned just a couple minutes ago about possibly having some good skills for investigating accounting issues.
Yes.
Could I get some kind of contact information to be able to talk with you about some possible projects that we've got coming up here in Florida?
Absolutely. My number is 937-718-2346.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
So anyone else with comments?
Yes, Tom has a comment. I'd like to thank Jim for taking the time out to run the board and for doing this paperwork. And Steve, I'd like to thank you for promoting this.
Not a problem.
Yeah, no thanks needed, my friend. We're all working together. It's no thanks needed.
If we don't do this, we go down the tubes, so we better do it.
Yep. I don't want to go down the tubes. I really don't.
It's too hard.
If we don't hang together, we'll all hang separately.
Amen.
Yep.
So are we going to do this Monday again?
Yeah, we can go for Monday, 9 o'clock on Monday.
9 o'clock on Monday, okay.
Yep. Yeah, I noticed you started a little early tonight.
Yeah. Thursday night is, we start at 8, Monday night,
oh, okay.
9. Yeah.
Yeah, the email I got is a week old, so
yeah.
It still had 9 on it. Is JB on here tonight?
No, I didn't hear JB. I don't think he called in.
No, he didn't. He didn't call in. I didn't see him on the board.
He did try to call you, though, Dean, a couple of times.
Yeah. Yeah, I did see it pop up here on my phone, but I was out I was out sweating my tail off outside, so I didn't get it.
Yeah.
I did call him back though.
Yeah. Well, a little phone tag going there.
Yeah.
So anyone else with comments? Any questions? If not, we'll wrap it up.
Well, y'all done a splendid job.
Thanks. Appreciate it. So with that, we'll wrap it up. Good night, everybody. God bless you. And let's recruit some forces. Let's get this daggone enforcement going.
Yeah.
I'll drink to that one.
Absolutely.
Amen.
Yep. Thanks a lot, Steve, for the call. Appreciate it.
Good night, everybody.
God bless you all.
Hey, Steve.
God bless.
Yeah. Steve, this is Roger. Any chance I could get your contact info?
Oh, yeah, Roger. Steve Gronka is the name, STEVE. And then Gronka is G as in girl, RON as in Nancy, KA. And the phone number is 404-434-0660.
Yep.
And the email is stevegronka@me, that's M as in Mark, E as in Edward, .com.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Roger. God bless you. Thanks for coming on the call.
Thanks. Have a good night.
You too.
Dave and the Thumb out.
Anybody else left there? I guess everyone's all right.
Just a couple, Steve. There.
What's that?
Two or three, that's all.
Okay. All right.
Well, it's just me. I gotta get across the phone to my across the room to my phone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, Dean, on basically the perspective that we have on the call is that the court that we're talking about is set up having taken out the government that's in place. So you were talking about going to the statutory court, and the assumption here is that the statutory court is no more, and we're in a transition period where we need to have a transitional court until new elections and then everything else takes place to put the structure back in place again.
Yeah. Well, what I was trying to get across is that even their statutory says that when they cause us a harm,
right,
it's supposed to cost them dearly. And these little fines, like one guy used to be, they'd lock him up for a weekend or whatever, and then they'd let him out on a Monday, and he was selling with $35,000. And I said, are you kidding me? That's $1 million a day. If I got you 24 hours, that's $1 million. Figure it up.
Yeah.
If you go by what what's his name saying, that Travazan case down there in Florida, if you go by that one, and they got you locked up that long, they owe you some serious money.
Yeah.
And we need to hit them with that. They have no problem hitting us. Let's hit them.
Goodbye.